From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, February 27th, 2026. A watchdog agency found that the state paid the vast majority of child care providers on time for helping to care for foster children. But as Kevin Miller reports, the agency highlighted multiple payment inconsistencies within the Maine Department of Health and Human Services.
Lawmakers requested the review last year from the Office of Program Evaluation and Government Accountability, or OPEGA, after hearing multiple complaints about the foster care system. One child care provider was reportedly owed $33,000 in back payments from the state, while another stopped accepting foster children because of missed payments. OPEGA's analysis found that 95% of the invoices the agency reviewed were paid within 30 days. But Republican Senator Jeff Timberlake of Turner and other lawmakers were surprised to learn that DHHS didn't have a standard invoicing form for providers and that the submittal and review process varied widely from office to office.
Why wouldn't the department have one location that everything goes to and one group of people that are responsible for making sure that this happens so that they're not chasing all over every district in the state?
Bobby Johnson, the director of the DHHS Office of Child and Family Services, told lawmakers that the agency welcomed the feedback in the OPEGA report and was already working to standardize the process. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Dozens of Maine National Guard members mobilized yesterday to support Rhode Island's blizzard response efforts. A spokesperson for the Maine National Guard says 10 dump trucks and two dozen soldiers will haul snow from critical infrastructure areas, roadways, and public spaces to restore normal operations throughout the city of Providence. Maine soldiers were en route less than 48 hours from the time the request came from the Rhode Island Department of Transportation and are expected to be there for about a week. Maine personnel are deploying under the Emergency Management Assistance Compact, a mutual aid agreement that enables states to support one another during emergencies and natural disasters. The Maine Department of Transportation will stage a procession and memorial tomorrow for the two workers killed while working on I-95 last month. The department says the procession will leave from Fairfield at noon, travel down the interstate, and end at the Augusta Civic Center, where a memorial service will begin at 1:15. The workers, James Brown and Dwayne Campbell, were struck and thrown from a highway bridge last month. Samantha Tupper, the driver who ran a temporary stop sign triggering the incident, may face criminal charges. National union leaders who are backing U.S. Senate candidate Graham Plattner have urged Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to end his support for Governor Janet Mills. Steve Missler has more.
According to a report by NBC News, unions representing auto, electrical, and aerospace workers have described Mills' relationship with organized labor as fraught, if not adversarial. And they told Schumer that attacks on Plattner during his Democratic primary campaign could ultimately persuade union workers to vote for Collins in November. The report highlights the tensions between factions in the Democratic Party. Plattner has won the support of several union organizations, in part by criticizing National Democrats for abandoning the working class. Schumer helped recruit Mills to run for the U.S. Senate, and groups aligned with the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee are expected to spend money boosting her in the upcoming primary campaign. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The Can-Am Crown International Sled Dog Races are returning to Fort Kent tomorrow. As Michael Livingston reports, mushers have started arriving in the northernmost tip of Maine for the longest and most intense competition in the eastern United States.
The Lonesome Pine Ski Lodge will be the finish line for the Can-Am Crown, but on Friday, it's the place where mushers register their teams and go through required checks with veterinarians. Tables are covered in bags of dog food, paperwork, and emergency supplies. Can-Am president and trail boss Dennis Sear says if all the preparation goes well, the small town of Fort Kent will look completely different in less than 24 hours.
You've never seen 400 or 500 dogs together all barking in one area, anxious to do what they love to do, and that's race against each other. You know, this is an event you should at least, on your bucket list, come at least one time.
mushers come from all over North America to participate in either a 30, 100, or 250-mile race through the upper St. John Valley and deep into the Allagash Wilderness. The top 12 will get a cut of a $51,000 prize purse. But more than that, the Can-Am is a chance for mushers to showcase skills that can only come from hundreds of hours of training. Most mushers say they have goals apart from a first-place finish. For local kennel owner Jonathan Hayes, it's about bringing attention to his own particular breed of sled dogs, the Sepala Siberian. They're named after Leonard Sepala, who famously transported life-saving serum through the Alaskan wilderness to save a town gripped by diphtheria in 1925. It inspired the animated movie Balto.
They are as rugged as anything you could ever imagine, and I think they really encapsulate the Maine spirit.
Hayes was part of an effort last year to make the Sepala Siberian Maine's official state dog. He says other sled dogs have since been bred to outperform the Sepala in both speed and strength. But Hayes continues to raise them to honor the beginnings of sled dog racing and to share Leonard Sepala's story.
I'm showing up to a Formula One race in a 67 Camaro. That's what I'm doing. And so obviously my goal is not to win. My goal is to let these dogs show that 100 years after Leonard Sepala brought them to Maine, that they can still do what they were bred to do.
Meanwhile, the Barrel family has transported 24 dogs from their home in Quebec. That's because 3 members of the family are all participating this year. Jeffrey Barrel will be competing in the 250-mile race, while his wife Caroline and his 13-year-old son Matisse will run the 30-mile. The amount of work it takes to raise over 24 dogs can cause friction in the family, Jeffrey says, but watching his kids learn to race makes it all worthwhile.
When you jump on the runner, everything flushes out and the enjoyment starts there. Like,
Jeffrey expects this will be his toughest Can-Am yet, because if one of his dogs gets injured, he won't be able to replace it. This year, he says he's focused on making sure not to overwork his dogs and on what his family can accomplish in their own respective races.
What we, as a family, I've always teach my wife, my son, my girl, what is important is not winning, is when you arrive at the finish line and those dogs are all fired up, like, where's the other leg? You know what I mean? That's what we like.
On Saturday morning, these mushers and over 40 more will take to the starting line on Fort Kent's Main Street. The 250-mile race likely won't be completed until Monday or even Tuesday. Mushers will carry GPS trackers so the race can be followed online. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Michael Livingston.
For years, the state of Maine has offered energy efficiency incentives to help homeowners stay warm in the winter, lower energy costs, and reduce climate warming emissions from their heating system and the electric grid. But it can be daunting to know where to start, how to hire the right contractors, or apply for a state rebate. Now there is an expanding network of volunteer energy coaches to offer some guidance. Peter McGuire reports from York, where one of Maine's first coaching programs is showing results.
We kind of take shoes off in this house, so if you don't mind, that would be super.
More than a year ago, Pam Stuppy started thinking seriously about making her 50-year-old timber frame family home a little more energy efficient.
Just looking at trying to cut back on use of fossil fuels, that was one of the biggies, and trying to be part of the trend to try to work some alternative energy sources into our system.
Stuppy knew her house had issues with draft and moisture, and she wanted to use her propane boiler more efficiently, but she wasn't sure where to start. Then she heard about a free energy coaching program from York Ready for Climate Action. 2 coaches came by her house and started brainstorming ways to keep warm air in and cold air outside. Stuppy says she liked that they were local volunteers.
It's just like a neighbor down the street was putting our heads together and thinking what we could do with this situation.
Eventually, Stuppy followed her coach's advice and got a home energy audit. She started sealing drafts, adding insulation and thermal curtains. Finally, she got heat pumps and subscribed to a community solar farm. And Stuppy says she stayed in touch with her coaches through the whole process.
It just felt like we had somebody we could turn to, and if we needed some more resources, we knew we could tap into that system.
Stuppe's experience is exactly the kind of outcome Rosanna Patain wants to see. Patain, who is involved in York's Climate Action Group, organized the coaching program 4 years ago to help reduce greenhouse gas pollution from the town's buildings. Home heating fuel accounts for half of York's emissions, according to a 2022 inventory.
So we knew that we would have to make headway in helping people cut their carbon emissions and electrify if the town was going to meet its climate action goals.
So far, coaches have visited almost 80 homes, helping to facilitate dozens of heat pump installations, energy audits, and insulation projects.
I would say we've been successful beyond my imagination in most aspects of the work that we do. The part that we have not been successful at is reaching our low-income community.
Patain says a coalition of similar coaching programs in Mount Desert Island, Camden, and elsewhere are now developing best practices to help jumpstart new groups across the state and hopefully connect to people struggling with high energy costs and aging homes.
Of the existing energy coach activity that we uncovered through this research, a lot of it's happening in the southern and coastal areas, and it would be really nice to be able to see different approaches in parts of the state that don't already have this activity.
Molly Siegel from the Governor's Office of Policy Innovation in the Future tells lawmakers a state-run resource hub could provide training and guidance to grassroots groups popping up in Maine. She adds a pilot could cost $50,000 to $100,000.
That's one of my projects that I noticed the other day. You notice these things when it's...
In her York home, Pam Stuppe is showing energy coaches Larry Richburg and Pam Casey where she plans to block the cold air coming up through her kitchen counter.
I don't know, it'll be a combination of weather stripping and caulking or what it will be, but that's definitely on the list. One of the next things on the list, like the end of this week list.
Richburg's a retired home builder and is focused on finding areas of improved efficiency in the home.
That's my drive, is just to help people do what they can do to you know, contribute to hopefully helping things and straightening this world out.
Casey, a former teacher, has a head for numbers and records.
You know, it's my way of helping the environment. It's my in a bigger way than just doing my own little job.
According to a progress report issued last year, Maine was less than halfway to its goal of weatherizing 35,000 homes by 2030. The state's climate action plan recommends more coaching programs to help people access incentives and benefits and get closer to reaching that target. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning for Weekend Edition with Jess Miller starting at 8 on Maine Public Radio. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.